Hello.
Hello.
How you doing?
Good. How are y'all? Yeah.
It's been a day.
Okay.
I told Ashley a joke of gold,
Well,
and she hated it.
I didn't
Hate it. I just didn't particularly enjoy it. You hated it. It wasn't your best joke, though.
I think it was.
It wasn't like I didn't laugh at your best ever joke.
It was pretty good, wasn't it?
It was all right.
I think it was great.
It was quick.
Think it's a Dan Aykroyd joke, actually.
That would probably make sense.
So just imagine me as Dan, but it's me sing it, but it's Dan Aykroyd.
Still not as funny.
I think it was hilarious.
Is this all staying in the
I don't know. It's been
episode? Should we have some banter before I introduce us? Do you want Mama to open it?
Please.
Okay.
What
Here you go.
Thanks, Mom.
You're welcome, sweetie. Ah!
happened?
Her kombucha fizzed over.
My booch is
Oh, no.
We are the two whitest girls right now. I'm drinking a Starbucks Frappuccino with my drawing pad in front of me, and you're eating noodles with kombucha.
Oh, goodness.
Really?
Yep.
Why are you drinking kombucha? Because it's gonna make you burp.
I'm sorry, my tummy's kind of upset.
I mean, my tummy is too,
You
but
want
I'm.
some booch?
I just don't think it's the best drink to drink on air.
Well, I have a bottle of water.
Is that going to calm your burps down? This podcast should have a fourth host named Sally's Burps.
Sally's stomach.
No, it's named Boocha.
No, and it's just the noises my body makes.
Oh, God. Oh, God. I also told Sally that I was taking my hoodie off, but she had to promise not to look at my armpit hair because it's absurdly long right now.
Hot. I'm a little bit hot.
Okay, so now we're drinking Boocha,
Booch.
Booch, and eating on a podcast. What do you think this
Mm-hmm.
is? A Dungeons and Dragons podcast? Okay, well, welcome to Legendary
I'm not
Lasses.
eating hot grapes, baby.
You interrupted our intro for
I'm
that,
sorry,
baby.
baby.
Welcome to Legendary Lasses. I'm Ashley.
I'm KB.
And I'm Sally.
I was really hoping you were gonna say Booch.
Oh, and this is Booch.
Oh, God.
Oh,
Listen, I can do this shit on the command.
KB, what are we talking about? Please help.
okay, so I've got three ladies to talk about.
Three?
Why?
And it's because I want to talk about it's something that's been on my mind, but basically the idea of women needing to be pure
Okay.
is something that I wanted to think about. And my
Speaking of
frame of
which,
yes.
have y'all seen the film on, why did I call it a film? Anyway,
A
have you
film?
a film? Have y'all seen the film on Hulu called Pure?
No.
It's 20. I'm not gonna say it's 50 shades of messed up, but it's about 25 shades of messed up.
Oh, dear.
It's weird, man. It takes the okay, the premise of this, the whole plot of this film takes place at a summer camp that is for dads and daughters and like a purity camp.
Ooh, no.
Yeah.
I'm already out.
So go watch Pure on Hulu. It's a horror film, just in case anybody was wondering.
Ugh.
Sally is horrified eating her noodles. I wish this was a visual medium. I'm gonna have to edit out your noodle sucking sounds.
I think we should be an ASMR podcast, but no.
Okay, purity.
Yeah. So I'm going to talk about my frame of reference for this, because I grew up Catholic, is of course the saints. And there are three that I kind of have in mind that they died when they were young girls, and they're sort of held up as symbols of like chastity and purity and all of that stuff.
Sure.
So I wanted to talk about them, right. Because I think they have interesting stories. But it bothers me that, like, their stories are used to perpetuate this idea that a girl's value is in her purity, you know,
sure.
Which is just icky to me a little bit.
Sure.
So I wanted to talk about them this week.
Cool.
So,
let's do it.
Okay. Well, I'm going to start with St. Agnes. Basically, because when you think about like purity and chastity and all that stuff, St. Agnes is like the saint. Like, she's the patron of young girls and chastity and rape survivors. And so she's kind of like poster child for this idea of purity that I'm talking about.
Okay.
So she's also known as Agnes of Rome, and she was born in around in like the 290s AD, and she was raised in a Christian family.
Okay.
So the story goes that she was this beautiful girl. She was from this upper class kind of family, and everyone wanted to marry her. So she had all these men.
Ain't that always the way?
Ugh, I know. She had all these men after her.
As you
mind you, she's in like her early teens at this point, but all these men want to marry her.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so they're all trying to like win her hand. When I say early teens, I mean like she is like 13 years old at this point.
Yeah.
But all these men are trying to marry her.
I tried to say yikes and yuck at the same time, and it came out yucks.
Yeah.
Which is, like, fitting, I think.
I think so.
Yikes and yuck and ugh. All of the above.
Ugh.
So, but because she was Christian and she apparently had this special relationship with God, she had promised him that she was going to remain chaste.
Okay.
So, and her love for God was so much that she hated sin and wanted to be pure for him and all this stuff, which, oh dear. It was said that
there.
Oh, what?
I feel like you have some opinions on that.
Oh, for sure. You know, I feel like we'll get into that. I'm going to continue with Agnes.
Okay.
So because she wanted to stay pure, she didn't want to marry anyone. And there was this, it said that she would say things like, oh, Jesus is my spouse, you know.
A bride of Christ.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that where we get that phrase?
I don't know if she's like the first, but yeah, it's definitely in that vein.
Yes.
Yeah. So the young men that wanted to marry her, she kept turning them away and kept turning them away and saying this, like, I love Jesus thing. And they got angry, of course. And yeah. So at the time, Christianity is still kind of like in its, it's considered like a weird cult or whatever in Rome at this time.
Yeah.
So her name gets submitted to the authorities. They say, hey, she's a Christian. You might want to go check this out and, like, you know, burn her at the stake or something.
Yeah, that's not right.
So,
not that Christianity is a cult. I mean, for the time in Rome.
Well,
yeah.
No, because I was like, okay, what's the difference between a cult and a religion? And it just said a religion is an old cult.
Well, and they can file for different taxes.
Yeah.
That's it. We're going to get some feedback on this episode.
Oh, man. Yeah. But basically, so one of the incidents of like her being reported was the governor's son wanted to marry her and she refused him. And he tried to give her like all these gifts and all this stuff. And she said, no.
Money can't buy me love. Yeah. Love. Can't buy me love.
So yeah,
did
she
you like our cover?
Yes, that was one.
Start a Beatles cover band.
Fuck me up,
me, you, KB, and Booch.
Your stomach. Was that Ringo?
All of yeah, it's very percussive.
Okay. And I like the
Booch. Can I be John? Of course, you're John. George was my favorite.
Yeah, I love George. He's a sweet boy. Sorry, we got off on a Beatles tangent.
No, that's okay. But yeah, so this governor's son is trying to like basically bribe her into marrying him. And she said, no, I belong to God, basically. Yeah. And he didn't like that, of course.
Of course he didn't.
So what do you think he did after that?
Killed
he
her.
Only...
he cut her throat. He punched her in dear. The belly. I don't know, but probably physically
he
harmed
her.
So he went to his father, the governor.
Oh, no.
And once again, the governor tries to bribe Agnes into marrying his son. And he says, here's all these lovely things for you, but all you have to do is say that you're not a Christian, deny God, and just marry my son, and it'll be great. That's what the governor says. But Agnes says, nah, I don't think that's a good deal. So no.
I agree, Agnes.
Yeah. So then, and I'm going to say accounts differ a little bit, but the basic premise is the same. Basically, they strip her naked. And,
13-year-old girl.
Yes, a 13-year-old girl.
Okay.
They strip her naked. One account says that they take her to a brothel, but that she's so pure and wonderful and an angel is protecting her. And so no one will touch her except for one man. And he touches her and he's struck blind.
A 13-year-old girl. Just to clarify, yeah. We're talking yes. about a 13-year-old girl.
Yes. And then another
Does
account.
Does anyone else feel yucky about this?
I feel very yucky.
Okay. Yes, it's gross. So another account says that she's taken through the streets naked, but the second she gets in the street,
shame! All- shame! I need a bell!
But the second she gets in the street, all of her hair grows so long that none of her is exposed.
So she's literally cutting it!
Yes. So, and once again, any man who attempted to, like, rape her in the street, they're immediately struck blind.
They should be.
Yes. A few different accounts of that part. And then there's another account that says then, after all that happened, she was tied to a stake, but the wood wouldn't burn and the flames sort of, the flames wouldn't touch her. They parted around her. Which then.
Very familiar.
Yeah.
Which then, after that happened, this soldier drew his sword and he beheaded her.
As you do.
Yeah.
I think.
So she died at around the age of 12 or 13. And that was in 304 AD.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
So I guess one of the things that I want to talk about with this, and it's kind of with all of them, is what qualifies women for being martyrs? Because a lot of the time, like when we talk about male martyrs, and it's like they're defending the faith and,
right.
you know, they're more soldierly, I'll call it.
Yeah, I guess. Warrior-like.
Yeah, but for women, a lot of the time, it's defending the faith, kind of, but more specifically by defending her own purity.
But, like, not even defending purity, like, defending your own body.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel very yucky about this.
Yes, me too. This whole topic, it makes me kind of cringe a little bit. Just because it's gross. Like, I don't... It's about to get worse, y'all.
Oh, lovely.
That's what I'm looking for.
Didn't expect that one.
While Agnes is the one that everyone kind of points to as like, oh, she is the like pure chaste martyr girl, there is one other saint who has kind of a, I guess, a similar trajectory as far as like she's a martyr because she's defending her purity and all that. And it's Saint Dimphna.
I'm sorry, what?
Saint Dimphna.
Dimphna?
Dimphna. Yeah.
Who hated her?
Oh, be nice.
Out of names, they're just like a dim.
Yeah, I mean, she was probably like the 25th kid, and they were like, oh, we don't have any dis.
We're just gonna like make up. We're just gonna throw a bunch of syllables together.
We already have a Daphne. I guess we're gonna do a Daphne.
Daphne. She is the patron saint of everyone who suffers from either like nervous or mental.
Me.
Disorder. The reason that I kind of started looking into her life is because of that. So she was born in the 7th century. So this is a few centuries after Agnes, of course. And she was born in Ireland. And she had a pagan father and a Christian mother.
Oh, that's a unique combination for that time.
Not only that, but her father was a king, so she is royalty, and she's born to this pagan king father, her Christian mother. And when she's 14 years old, she takes a vow of chastity. She says, I belong to Christ, much like Agnes kind of does. And after that, her mother dies.
Can we take a moment here?
Yes.
Because I feel like, one, these are all relatively young girls so far.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But two, it seems like it's mostly to be like, I literally don't want to spend any time with you gross boys.
Yes.
Like, it's just like, no, I'm good.
I feel like 14-year-old me feels that on a spiritual level.
Same.
Yeah.
Me that really contemplated becoming a nun and like just didn't want to deal with this.
Yeah.
So yeah, I get exactly what you mean.
So her mom dies.
Yes, her mom dies.
That's sad.
After her mother dies, her father kind of rapidly deteriorates and he is not mentally stable anymore.
See, this is why they need women.
Yeah, they exactly.
They go bonkers.
Well, his advisors thought that exact same thing. Listen, the king, his name is Damon. King Damon.
Damon?
Damon.
I love it.
Like Matt Damon.
King Matt Damon. No.
Oh,
King
my God. Damon.
King Damon needs to remarry. This is what his counselors tell him. So, he's grieving for his wife still, but he agrees that he's going to remarry someone as long as she is as beautiful as his wife and looks like his wife.
Oh, no.
No.
No, 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 no.
Do you see where this is going?
No, please. Please tell me my brain is wrong.
No, probably not. So... Anyway, Damon sends out all these different messengers and they go from town to town. They go to other kingdoms and stuff and they try to find a woman who is of suitable birth, who resembled his wife enough and would be willing to marry him. And I'm going to guess there are not many women who fit all three. So after they couldn't find anyone like that, his advisors are kind of like, whispering to each other, and they're saying, hey, maybe he should marry his own daughter. And his mind is so far gone at this point that instead of he started seeing his wife. Yeah. So he's like, sure, great.
Oh,
now,
no.
Yeah. So Dimphna hears about this. She catches wind that some shit's going down that she is not going to like.
She's got to get out of there.
Yeah. So she flees the castle.
Good.
And she goes with a priest, and his name is Jerebran, and they take servants and the king's fool, which I was like,
what?
Why is he on this adventure? But okay.
They were in love.
And maybe.
And the priest to marry them.
He's the Olaf to this story.
I was like, this is sounding a little too Romeo and Juliet a little bit at this point. The story is buck wild, as you would
say. Comedic relief.
Yeah. I'm like, is this a Shakespeare plot? Like, what is going on here? Anyway, so they all go off toward an area that it's now Belgium, and they hid in this town.
Okay.
So they're chilling out. They're hiding. Great. No one really knows what's going to happen next, but basically Dimphna finally settles in and she's like, I'm going to try to help the poor and sick, because she's still like consecrated to Christ in her, you know, in her mind. She's like Christ's lady. I don't know how that works.
Right.
Yeah. But so she's going to build this hospital for the poor and sick, but in using like all the wealth she got out of the castle with, her father is able to track her down.
Oh no.
Yes. So Damon finds his daughter in Belgium.
Oh,
and
no.
He basically orders people to kill the priest and they decapitate him. And
You're killing my priest? I don't know why I killed my priest, but I feel very connected
to him. The person who knows her the most, they just kill him. And he attempts to convince Dimphna to go back to Ireland and to marry him. And if I were Dimphna, I'm sitting here, I'm like, I'm 14. You're my dad. You just killed the one person who actually probably cares about me. I am not more likely to say yes in this situation than I was before.
No.
So no.
14-year-old me would have been like, no.
Yeah. So basically she refuses. Damon gets real angry, draws his sword, and then he decapitates her and just leaves her there. Yeah.
This should be a visual medium for this story, because we're horrified.
I'm trying to look for a picture of a dog to cheer me up.
Man, maybe on break we can just look at puppies.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Rough, y'all. So she died at 15 years old. And her father left and I guess went back to Ireland. But the residents of the town that she was in, they took their remains and they laid them, both Dimphna and Jerebran, and they put them to rest in this cave, which sounds very Christ-like to me.
Yeah.
I just, yeah. So they make her a martyr, and she's canonized fairly quickly, like within the same century.
Oh,
she's canonized. Wow. Yeah, I know. I didn't know that they were canonizing. I mean, I guess it makes sense, but I didn't know they were canonizing people then. But basically, they canonize her. She's a saint. She's known as Lily of Ire.
That sounds
like Lily of Ireland.
Yeah.
They built several churches and shrines and things like that. At some point, part of her remains got moved to Ohio for some reason.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
When?
There's a United States National Shrine of St. Dimphna, and it's at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Massillon, Ohio.
When did it get moved to Ohio?
Let me see. I'm trying to find the date. I can't find the date for when it was moved, but like, man.
What a strange, odd place for that to end up.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Or part of her.
I was like, am I reading that? She ended up in Ohio? I would not want to end up in Ohio. Like, leave my remains in the cave.
But then your will. Don't move my remains to Ohio.
Yeah. But now she's the patroness of, again, anyone with mental afflictions, as well as victims of incest. She's the patron saint for those people. So
it's yucky that we need a patron saint of that.
Yeah. Yeah. But once again, she's made a martyr because she defended her purity and she had this connection to Christ. She says she's consecrated for God. So very similar to Agnes in those ways.
Yeah.
So to me, they're very similar to each other. But I just, I want to talk a little bit about martyrs.
Yeah.
In general.
Okay.
Because one of the things that, and again, growing up Catholic, you hear all about the martyrs and like dying for your faith and all that stuff. And I don't know. I always felt very strange about that. Because I don't know. I get that you're supposed to defend your faith and all of that, but also you have been given this life. And I don't know. So yeah. I'm curious what your thoughts are on that. Specifically, and what bothers me, I think, about their stories, particularly as we still talk about them in a modern context, is basically this is saying it is better for you to die and keep your purity than it is to be soiled, quote unquote, soiled in any way.
Right.
No matter if, like, someone is trying to violently do that to you, which I think is a terrible message.
Yeah,
that's pretty terrible. So
I have a couple of thoughts. The first is that it also reminds me of like old Chinese poetry that talks about invading armies and the women who would leap into the river.
Yes, yeah.
And it's to save themselves from being, I'm going to use your term, soiled in any way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I'm also, I've been thinking about this idea of like women martyrs, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Joan of Arc is considered a martyr, right?
Oh yeah.
Yes. And so I wanted to talk about her after the break. She's my third.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe then I'll save my thought for after we're done with that.
Okay.
But
because Joan of Arc is a little bit different.
Yeah.
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 I would say, like, Joan of Arc is kind of the bridge between, like, the male warrior for Christ kind of martyr and that sort of pure, pedestaled, you know, girl martyr that we see with, like, Agnes and Dimphna.
Yeah.
She's kind of the in-between.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I've always been fascinated by Joan of Arc.
Same.
Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. I think we all know that I like a good cross-dressing lady.
Yeah.
To, like, get shit done.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know. Joan of Arc specifically is intriguing to me. I think it's because there is this religious aspect to it.
Mm-hmm.
And also the Lele Sobieski? Hmm? The actress, is it Lele Sobieski? She played Joan of Arc in
Was it Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure?
No, she played Joan of Arc in Joan of Arc.
Whatever. Joan of Arc was in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Okay, well, I'm talking about the movie. Oh my god.
I'm gonna do the guitar riff.
It was really good, Sally. Thanks. Yeah, but I think this idea of martyrs in general is kind of strange, too.
Yeah.
Because, like, yes, you're dying for your faith, and in a way it's defending your faith, but it's also like, no, your life is still taken from you, even if this is considered a gift.
Yeah.
So I think it kind of brings in this idea of predestination as well. Mm-hmm. Was your life given to you as a gift for martyrdom?
Yeah. Does that make sense? Because we talk about Christ being that way. You know, he was born so that everyone could be saved.
Yeah.
And so that makes me wonder, like, is it the same with them? Or where does free will come into that? And
yeah.
There's a lot of theological questions I have that I do not know we can even begin to get into on this podcast.
Well, I mean, like, I think we have to also take into account the political agenda as well, right? Like, yes. There are martyrs because there's a political agenda. You make someone a martyr to send a message.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Well, and I do not think it's by accident that Demphna's father is pagan.
No, no, not at all.
And I do not think it's by accident that Agnes is in Rome, and again, it's pagans.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they're, and we'll see with Joan of Arc, it's kind of like the English get vilified in the same way that, like, the Romans do in Agnes's story.
Yeah.
Because, oh, it's the English who killed her, you know?
Right.
So I think there is, you make a good point that there's a sort of political aspect to martyrdom as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my gosh, I have so many thoughts right now.
Yeah.
Just showed Ashley a picture of a puppy.
Yeah, that did happen.
It's maybe really- it is a good time for a puppy break.
Okay, let's have a puppy break, and then we'll get back. Enjoy the ad, yeah. And look at some puppies before you come back.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hi.
That was a break. Before we get started, I feel like we have to honor a fallen sister.
Yeah.
Miss Lola.
Pup of the podcast.
We tried to have a happy puppy break. Yeah. But that didn't happen.
And Sally spilled the beans.
I'm sorry.
I hope your puppy break was better than ours, people.
Yeah. So Joan of Arc.
Joan d'Arc.
Yep. She was born in 1412 and she died in 1431. So she did not lead a long life.
Not particularly.
So she was, what, that would make her 19, mm-hmm, I think, yeah, when she died. So again, a teenager, and she is the patron of soldiers and co-patron of France.
Yep.
So, I feel like a lot of people have heard about Joan of Arc, and I had contemplated doing an all Joan of Arc episode, but I think another thing we want to do and what we sort of set out to do was to talk about not just like famous women of history that people already know about, but also women who maybe have had similarly daring things happen, or, you know, things happen in their life that people don't know as much about. So
yeah,
that's where we got the sort of three women today. But basically, Joan of Arc, she's born to these really religious parents, and they are French peasants. They're just living out in the countryside, you know. They're in this tiny village, and at an early age, she starts hearing these voices of these saints. St. Michael, St. Catherine. Yes, St. Michael, St. Catherine, and St. Margaret, and she starts getting messages from them.
Now, St. Catherine, is that the spiked wheel lady?
Yes, I think so, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
So she's hearing these voices of St. Michael, St. Catherine, and St. Margaret. Like you said, Catherine's the one with the, like, wheel. And St. Margaret, I think they're referring to St. Margaret of Scotland. Which is interesting that this French peasant girl is seeing
a Scottish,
this former English princess / Scottish queen.
I'd be very careful about saying English.
Why?
What period is Margaret from?
True. She's from the 1000s.
Not English.
So.
Interesting that a French peasant is seeing another enemy of England, though.
I don't know much about her history, I guess. I don't know much about Margaret of Scotland.
Yeah.
But from what I can get from just a cursory glance, her brother was an Anglo-Saxon king of England. So,
oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's interesting on many levels that she would see Margaret of Scotland.
Yeah, that's pretty weird.
So yeah, she's seeing these saints, and we're still in a time period where, like, you don't get sent to the psychiatrist for that. They just kind of believe you. So at first she's getting all these messages, and they're kind of things about herself, general things. And then when she's 13, she's in the garden, just chilling. She has these visions of these saints, all three of them. And all of them tell her that she is going to drive the English out of French territory.
So, question, all three of them showed up at once?
I think so. I don't know if they were all sitting there, like, council style, or if it was, like, one after the other.
This sounds like the worst afternoon tea party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but all of them tell her, this 13-year-old French peasant girl, hey girl, you're gonna drive out the English. So,
okay.
They deliver this message, and then but they deliver this message, they depart. Joan is like, interesting, okay. And when she's 16, so 3 years pass, and she goes and seeks permission to visit the French royal court. Now, of course, this guy that she asks, who's called Baudricourt, I'm not good at French. Whatever his name is, he's like, okay, yeah, right. But Joan is not to be deterred. She comes back the following January, and then she goes with two of his soldiers. He's still not quite on board, but, like, two guys, she convinces them. Their names are Jean de Metz and Bertrand de Poligny.
Okay.
We're going to say that I pronounced that correctly. So, one of these guys, Jean de Metz, he says that Joan kept telling him, like, I have to be at the king's side. I'm the only one who can help him. And she keeps saying things like, oh, I would rather just be at home spinning the wool at my mother's side, but the Lord has told me to do this, so I have to. which is...
What a teenage girl response, though. Like, Dad, I don't want to. Fine.
Well,
that's not my real dad, and you never will be.
So this reminds me of, like, a little bit of Ballad of Mulan from... because she goes out and she fights, but then she comes back and does this sort of domestic role that she's supposed to fill.
Right.
So this idea that, oh, I would rather be filling my actual quote-unquote place in society, but the Lord has asked this of me, and that's why I have to do this.
Yeah.
That's an interesting part of this story that maybe we can delve further into, but anyway, she's going around with these two dudes, and they meet their master, Baudricourt, again, and Joan predicts this military reversal at this battle. Basically, a lot of what she's doing is she's able to sort of predict or foresee a lot of things that happen as far as battles with the conflict that's going on between France and the English.
So she's a really good tactician.
Point is it? I don't remember. I guess maybe it is. I don't know. History. I should know more of it.
So the point is that she's just a really good tactician.
See, that's what I'm... How much is divinely given foresight, and how much is it she just has a mind for strategy and can realize what's going to happen before it does?
Well, she's a girl, so she can't do that, but...
Yeah. Oh, it must be divinely inspired.
Yeah.
Because the This is the 1400s and you're a teenage girl. So basically basically there's no way that she could have been at the battle's location at the time that it happened and also have gotten there in time to see him. So she's like, he says, oh, this must be like divinely revealed stuff. And he finally believes her. So once she gets Baudricourt to believe her, he tells her, okay, fine, we'll take you to the royal court. In order to do that, however, they have to go through hostile territory. So in order for her to be safe, she's escorted and she's dressed as a male soldier.
Hell yeah.
I knew that would be your favorite part.
Trousers!
So later this is going to lead to her being accused of like, oh, you're a cross-dresser or whatever. But they're going to say basically like, listen, her safety was paramount at this time. So what other choice do we have? And they get her to the court. She arrives. She has this private conference with the king, who at the time is Charles VII. She manages to win him over.
By Neil Patrick Harris, by the way.
What?
Yes. Neil Patrick Harris played this king in the Lele Sobieski movie.
I gotta watch this movie.
It's so good, you guys. I watched this movie like 3 or 4 times as like a 10-year-old.
So she manages to win him over too. And then his mother-in-law, she's planning this expedition to Orléans. And that's the only one I know for sure how to pronounce. Maybe.
Oui, mon ami.
It was very parfait. Parfait. Yeah. Not the tea, because parfait also means perfect. Right?
Yes.
But on this expedition, Joan is going to ask to travel with the army and ask to be wearing armor. They agree to let her do this. So they give her the armor. She asks for donations for everything else. So she's got a donated horse, a donated sword, a banner. She's got the armor, all of her like various stuff she needs to go with the army.
It's interesting that the sword is donated, because I feel like every warrior, their sword is like paramount to their story too.
Yeah. Well, okay. How symbolic do you want to get into this? Because I could talk about how that's a phallic symbol. I care more about it, but like,
I don't really want to get very Freudian with this. But you know, I mean, like, yeah, I think that's obviously there, but like,
yeah,
you know. Every sword has a name and its background, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, like, who made it?
Yeah.
You know?
So, but yeah, she has all this donated stuff. She's going with the army. It's great. But the thing about it is, she arrives, and it sort of turns this conflict into a religious war.
Right.
So, she says she's doing God's work, that she's been told by the saints that, oh, I've got to drive out the English. Of course, you know, Charles has to be careful in this situation.
Yeah.
And so his advisors say, what if, you know, she's claiming she's doing God's work, but what if that gets twisted? What if people claim that she's into witchcraft, that she's actually the devil?
Yeah.
You know, all this stuff. So, in order
it's
to
like the French Crusades, except all of the Crusaders is one lady.
Yeah.
So it's gotta be turned around to witchcraft.
Yeah. So, to sort of get ahead of that, he orders all this. Basically, they do a background check on her. They do a background check and they give her a theological exam.
Okay.
So, This happens in 1429. So at this time, she is, let me check how old she is.
16, 17?
Let's see, 1429, and she was born in 12. So yes, she's like 17 years old. They basically test her on all these theological whatever they test her on. And they said that they declared her to be of irreproachable life, a good Christian, possessed of the virtues of humility, honesty, and simplicity.
So that's the highest compliment I've read of a woman in historical documents.
Yes. So they didn't really rule on whether or not she was acting on like divine inspiration. They didn't say like, yeah, God talked to this lady, but they basically said she's of good character. So
why can't we trust her?
Yeah. So Charles was satisfied with that, but people keep reminding him like, oh, she's got to be tested. She's got to be tested. How do we know? But at the same time, if we question her too much, is that us saying that we don't believe God and the Holy Spirit? So
right.
It's a weird rock and hard place situation for them.
Yeah.
So they start asking her to predict, once again, to predict certain results of battles and things like that. And she's able to do that. So prior
she's
to...
very lucky that she's a really... strategist. She would have been wrong on one of those.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo!
Well, and also they're very pointedly... They have someone watching her and making sure that she is... not let in on any kind of strategy stuff. They don't tell her about battles. They don't tell her anything. So.
Okay. So, like, is she just making these out of thin? Like, they wake her up in the morning. They're like, here's another test, Joan.
What happened? What happened yesterday?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know the exact ins and outs of the exact questions they asked her, but. Yeah, basically they're like continuing to test her and be like, hey Joan, what's happened?
She's like the 24-hour news cycle for them.
Yeah. So
Joan should actually be the patron saint of female reporters.
For real. So prior to her getting involved in all this mess, the French had only been on the offensive one time, and they were defeated. Things were not going great for them.
Yeah.
And although the army, Joan is never like out there being the commander of an army.
Right.
Also, it said that she never killed anyone in battle. It said that she preferred to just carry her banner and not to have her sword, which. See, I don't know, because it feels to me a little like, okay, we can't give this lady too much credit. You know what I mean?
Well, also, like, in kind of a weird way, soil her.
Yes, because she would have killed.
Yeah.
So, with Joan of Arc, I think she's particularly interesting because you have to... From the standpoint of, like, if you're trying to have this be part of your, you know, one of your great religious stories, one of the great people of your religion, and you're going to pass the story down or whatever, you have to strike an odd, precarious balance between her being this great warrior for God, but also, like, I'm also a lady.
Yeah.
You know. So
it's a weird balance. It's a very thin wire to walk.
Yes. But it's said that mostly what she did was there were several noblemen and she affected their decisions because they thought that she had this kind of divinely inspired advice. They were using her as an oracle, to be perfectly honest with you, yeah. Which is like a super pagan thing to do. But
yeah, she's very much in the like divination.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't ask her to look into a bowl of water. Like,
for real.
In this water.
So, Joan is, you know, kind of traveling with these armies. She's influencing their decisions. There's a lot of battles and sieges happening. That's kind of like, I'm not as interested, although I picked Joan of Arc, I'm not as interested in the history of war and battle tactics. But basically what happens is, at some point, she, even though she's getting all this support from noblemen and all these clergymen, they're backing her on the French side, she eventually is captured. And but yeah, so, and before she's captured, the one little side note that I don't know, I've never heard it really talked about, but basically Joan is given like a title. Charles the VII rewards her for her actions on the battlefield and like gives her family this ennoblement and stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. I've never heard that before. Yeah. I've never really heard that talked about. So I thought that was a really interesting like tidbit in there.
I've got to know more about that.
Basically, she's ennobled. There's a short truce. It doesn't last for very long at all.
Surprise!
Yes. So Joan, once the truce is broken, she's traveling to help defend against this English and Burgundian siege, basically. And she's captured by these Burgundian troops. And they hold her for ransom. There's several attempts to free her. She tries to make escape attempts. She jumps out of a 70-foot tower.
What?
And she jumps 70 feet from this tower, lands in a dry moat, but it's basically like mud. She lands in the mud, but she doesn't manage to get away. They still like catch her. But yeah, this girl was like, I'm gonna fucking escape. She was not having it.
70 feet?
70 feet, y'all.
She's lucky she didn't die then.
Exactly. Like,
break a leg.
Yeah, for real. So eventually, I guess because they didn't want to deal with her. Listen, if I were the Burgundians, I'd be like, this girl is jumping out of towers and shit. I can't deal with this. So they sold her to the English for 10,000 gold coins.
It's very much like she's too much to handle. We can't keep an eye on her 24/7. She's the Jeffrey Epstein of France. Except minus all the child trafficking.
Yeah.
Less child trafficking.
Yeah. So they sell her to the English for 10,000 coins. And the English get her, and she is tried as a heretic and a witch.
Yep.
So the problem is,
would you put her on a scale with a duck?
And if she weighs as much as a duck...
So I do want to talk about, and funnily enough, I do want to talk a little bit about Arthurian legend a little bit later.
Okay.
But basically she's tried as this heretic and a witch, and even though at the time they didn't have exactly the same process as we do, even for the time, it violated due process.
I mean, yeah.
So... basically, there's this cleric, and he's supposed to collect her testimony. He doesn't find any evidence against her to be able to try her, but they go ahead anyway. They're like, yeah, you know, who cares? We're going to initiate this trial anyway. They don't give her a legal advisor. They fill the people who are going to decide her fate. They are all pro-English clergy. And during the time, like, the church's requirement is that you have to balance the group. You have to have some impartial clerics. They didn't do that. It was all pro-English clergy.
Yep.
So they had a public examination. Joan basically said, look, bitches. She didn't say look, bitches, because she's, I guess, more dainty than that. But she basically told them, hey, you've got all pro-English people. I want some people on the French side to balance it out. And they said no.
Yeah.
But again, it's a public
agenda.
Exactly. Martyrdom and the political agenda. Yeah. So
she was also raped in prison, wasn't she?
I'm not sure, actually. I didn't see anything about that, but
I feel like I read that somewhere.
Let's see.
like the guards or something. I don't know. Maybe I'm making that up.
So what I'm okay. Oh, it was an English lord, and he attempts to rape her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Have y'all seen the movie The Favorite?
Yes, I saw The Favorite.
When that guy goes into Emma Stone's room, and she's like, oh, what an outfit. Are you here to seduce me or rape me? And he goes, oh, I'm a gentleman. She goes, oh, rape then.
I mean,
it's so funny.
That's a good movie.
I watched that 3 times.
It's so good. The costumes are there.
It's on HBO now.
Mm-hmm. I love the costumes.
So good. I want Rachel. Is her name Wise? Vise? Do you know who I'm talking about?
I want
all of her clothes. The shooting outfit.
Yeah.
The horse riding outfit.
So basically, she says once again, hey, give me some French dudes. They say no. Just to recap really quick. There are some people who object to the trial. Who are basically saying, this is a miscarriage of justice. Maybe we shouldn't do this. But basically, anyone who says that is being forced to cooperate. The English threaten to kill anyone who objects to the trial or tries to derail it. So other members of the clergy, they're all threatened, and the trial continues.
Okay.
So one of the interesting things about the trial is there's sort of this, I'm going to call it legend. I don't know how true it is, because again, I think because it's from this period, there is sort of the historical part of what happens with her, and then there's sort of the religious legend that happens with her. And a lot of the things that she says read very much like Jesus when he's questioned, things like that. There's a lot of parallels with that, and she just sort of comes off as a theologian. And
yeah, they did give her a pretty good PR afterwards.
Yeah. So, for example, one of the questions they asked her is basically they asked her
the velocity of an unladen swallow.
If only. So this is kind of the most famous exchange between them, and they're laying these traps on purpose. They are purposefully giving her, an illiterate peasant girl, by the way, these theological traps that are meant to trap her and to convict her.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like that one scene in My Cousin Vinny.
Oh my god.
Sorry.
But basically she's asked if she knew she was in God's grace. So the reason this is a trick question.
Does anybody know if they're in God's grace?
That's the reason it's a trick question. So the church doctrine at the time is that no one could be certain if they were in God's grace. So if she said yes, she would have been charged with heresy. If she said no, then they would have been like, oh, well, you're confessing your guilt.
Right.
What Joan is purported to have said is, if I am not, may God put me there. And if I am, may God so keep me.
Nice.
Yep.
Again, a tactician.
Yeah.
She is smart.
Yes. So those are the kinds of things that they put her through. And again, to me, it just echoes back to Jesus being questioned. Like them asking him, oh, should you pay taxes to Caesar? And all that stuff. Yeah. So this whole tribunal happens, this sham of a trial. Joan is held in prison. She's guarded by English soldiers. She's not in an ecclesiastical prison with nuns as her guards, which is usually how things would have been done. If she's part of like a religious based inquisition, she should be held in an ecclesiastical prison. However, she is in a secular prison with men as her guards, which I think is a purposeful choice. And Joan appeals, and she asks to be placed in a proper prison where she's supposed to be. The bishop denies her request, and she's still imprisoned in this secular prison. So while she's there, she wears military clothing so that she could tie it together, and that made it harder for her to be raped.
Okay.
There's no protect, like if she was wearing just a dress, she has no protection. So she's wearing one for like a few days, and that's when the Lord comes in and tries to rape her. And then Joan returns to wearing male clothing, and that's to, again, protect herself. So this is part of that whole argument that they were saying, like, oh, well, she cross-dresses, and she's like, it's literally because y'all are shitbags and I need to be protected. I mean, she didn't say that because, again, she's like a 1400s peasant girl, but that's the gist.
Right.
I think we kind of all know how this ends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Joan is burnt at the stake. Yes. Joan is burnt at the stake, and basically she's condemned and sentenced in 1431, and they execute her on May 30th of 1431. She's tied to a tall pillar, and basically, again, they burn her. But the thing about it is, so as early as 1452, and this is just 20 years later, There's an investigation into her execution. And so it doesn't take the church very long to recognize, like, oh, this wasn't a good thing. This should not have happened. So there's a posthumous retrial, and they open it up. The war has ended at this point. They open it up. The Pope is presiding, and it's called the nullification trial. So basically it's going to nullify everything that happened in the previous trial.
Okay.
And this is asked for by like a few people, but they included Joan's mother. So her mother is like, listen, you should not have done this to my daughter. Let's have a retrial. Because yeah. Joan at this point wouldn't have been that old. I mean, she died at, maybe for the time it was a little bit old, but she died at 19. So this would have been, she would have been about 40, I guess.
Wow.
At the time of her retrial. Yeah.
Damn.
So the trial, this retrial, it was meant to determine if her condemnation was handled justly. Of course,
I'm gonna go with no.
It was not, and that's what they ruled. And they said Joan is innocent, and now she's a saint, and also a martyr. So yeah,
it's funny how they just go, "Oh, she's been dead for 20 years.
Like that'll bring her back, you know?
She's a saint." Well, tell St. Peter, get her up there.
They didn't canonize her right away. They just declared her innocent in the 1400s. She was, she was beatified, which is like the step before sainthood, in 1909. So it took a long time.
Oh my God.
She was beatified in 1909. She's canonized in 1920.
Yeah.
So.
Christmas.
Mm-hmm. So this is
century after 100 years.
But definitely I would say, particularly of these three women we've talked about, Joan is the one that most people know about. There's a lot of different things based on her and her life.
Do you think because she is a little bit more masculine in her martyrdom?
I think that's part of it, is because she... Number one, I sort of wonder if it has something to do with a class thing, because she's the only one of the three that is like, she's a straight up peasant girl.
Right.
You know? And I think that, especially in like America, I think that appeals to a lot of people.
Like, I mean, I grew up Catholic, and when I was going through confirmation, I chose Joan of Arc.
My sister did too. I know a lot of women choose Joan of Arc.
Yeah, I think I was the only person that chose Joan of Arc. A lot of people chose Mary.
Mm.
Which, like...
Yeah.
I get it, but, like...
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I chose Therese, who is the other co-patron of France. Fun fact. My sister and I, like, we have co-patrons of France as our patrons.
Y'all eat, like, French fries and French toast?
We should.
and wear berets and have baguettes and have croque madame.
I can get on board with that for sure. So to get back to kind of like the theme for all of this, about women's purity. And even though Joan of Arc, like, she's martyred in a little bit different way than the other two, there's still this idea of, like, oh, there's the attempted rape in prison, and she is still supposed to protect herself.
Right.
And she wasn't violated, they just tried to, you know?
They didn't know what happened on the battlefield.
Oh, dear.
You telling me she's with all them young soldiers? Come on.
Stinky soldiers. No,
I mean, yeah, very, very stinky. That's true. That probably put me off of them, too.
Yeah.
Listen, I don't want to be anywhere near any part of you when you're running around in armor and you stink and you haven't bathed and it's the 1400s.
But a man in uniform. Woo, woo.
That armor really accentuates your
big biceps.
Yeah.
Oh God. Oh,
your biceps are so hard. I'm like, ma'am, that is metal.
Ma'am, that's my armor.
That's my armor.
Oh God. So I was interested in this idea of women martyrs and their purity and all of this, because again, I can only think of really one instance, and maybe you guys know of others, but I can only think of really one instance where like a man is identified with purity, and that's Sir Galahad.
Yeah.
Who's supposed to be like that perfect Christian knight who finds the Holy Grail. All that stuff.
He is the chaste knight.
Yeah. So, but other than
really
him,
what they did know is that Sir Galahad was just asexual. It was like, I don't want none of you.
I saw what happened to my dad because he fucked around too much. So no.
I'm good. I'm alright,
yeah.
Actually.
Because it wasn't at Lancelot that like. First of all, he got with the lady to make Sir Galahad. He got with Guinevere, like...
He was all over the place.
Yeah.
You want to know where syphilis came from? Came from Lancelot.
Oh, God. No, it didn't. Yeah. It came from... I don't want you to think about that too much.
But it also came from Lancelot.
Came from... No! Deep, that's what happened.
Yeah. From Lancelot.
But anyway, so I'm sure Galahad was like, nah, man, I'm good. I'm not about it.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I think that is kind of the only chaste male figure that's, like, praised for chastity, I guess.
Yeah.
That I can think of.
I could
think if there's one from like Greek classical, but I feel like all those heroes, they're all about town, too.
Oh, yeah, no, the Greeks fucked.
Yeah.
They fucked anything with a pulse.
Yeah, pretty much.
Mostly just Zeus does that, but...
And Odysseus.
I mean...
Yeah.
And Paris.
Yeah.
And Achilles.
Yeah.
Who am I forgetting here? Hector?
Oh, please. See, a lot of Greek history is driven by sex. Yeah, that's what I wanted to focus on this week. Just because it's been something that's been on my mind. Like, why do women have to be these perfect pedestal women? And I don't mean to suggest that, like, every female saint is this way. I just sort of noticed a trend with these young female chaste martyrs who, like, commit themselves to Jesus, you know, that sort of thing. Because believe me, there are definitely some female saints who like did not always behave well. And if you want to learn more about them, I highly recommend Saints Behaving Badly.
Yeah.
Which is a great book.
Mm-hmm.
Really interesting. That's my book recommendation for this week. Who's it by?
Yeah.
Let me check. I should have checked before I did this. Let's see. I don't have my copy on me. Let's see. Thomas J. Crowell?
See, was that a question or a statement?
That was a question. His first name is definitely Thomas. That middle initial is definitely J. His last name is spelled C-R-A-U-G-H-W-E-L-L. But yeah.
Yeah, Crowell.
Crowell.
Yeah. The full title is Saints Behaving Badly, The Cutthroats, Crooks, Trollops, Con Men, and Devil Worshippers Who Became Saints.
Trollops!
Yes. So, if you want to know more about that, that's a really interesting book, and I recommend it.
For sure.
But I wanted to talk about this trend that I saw with, like, these young teenage girls who basically die for their faith.
Do you think it also has to do with age?
I think somewhat it does. You know, well, and I don't know, because I think we talk about if a woman is, like, chased into her, like, 30s, let's say, then at what point does she become, like, the old maid who we suspect of being a witch? You know?
Or a lesbian.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, if Joan of Arc had been 30 when these things happened,
she was definitely a witch.
Yeah,
exactly. But yeah, because I don't know.
I think that there's this weird trend and kind of, I don't know if I want to say religion or theology or spiritualism, one or all three of these things combined. Mm-hmm. That, yeah. Like, We don't trust young girls, but we think young girls have some kind of connection to divinity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the soiling of that is ungodly.
Well, it's like you were saying, so that whole, I don't know what pure is about, but I can guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there's a whole culture of, like, purity rings and, like, promise your dad that you're not gonna do anything with anyone, which is, like, a creepy relationship.
That's just, this is, like,
I'm glad that never happened with me. I would have been,
yeah,
like,
that do it. Happened with my parents. Like, they were super open about stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I remember I put a lot of that pressure on myself. Because I remember, like, yeah, before I got to college, my mom was like, hey, do you want to go, like, on birth control? Just, like, I was like, no, what is that? That doesn't exist. What? And then, like, and I think a lot of it was just growing up Catholic, which my mom did as well. But, like, it was, some of it was, like, especially stuff like that was very fire and brimstone.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was, yeah.
So, non-denominational, yeah, Christian. It was never forced onto me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was never something that my parents brought up as far as, like, a promise or a purity ring, whatever you want to call it. But I had friends who had talked about it a lot.
Same.
And it was kind of something that I thought about for a long time, and I kind of remember just randomly bringing it up to my mom one day in the car that, like, hey, I think I want to get myself a ring. And it feels more like it was an agreement to myself.
Yeah.
Which I appreciate. I think I've talked about this before with, like, my parents, and, like, they very much believe in you having your own relationship to your own spirituality and religion.
Yeah.
Which, again, is something that, like, I really appreciate growing up in that kind of environment.
Mm-hmm.
So it was something that I did take part in.
See, but I think with your, like you said, it was more you decided to make a promise to yourself.
Yeah.
That's something that I can more get behind. I'm all about that. Like you saying, I don't want to do this until what?
Until like, if you do it, you're doing it on your own accord.
Yeah.
Not because of the religion you subscribe to.
Right.
And I remember like, I mean, yeah, it was really weird. And then at one point I was just like, why?
Why? Yeah.
I was like, why should there be shame in doing that? Because it's just there. Why should there be shame in something that's so beautiful? You know, like, if, you know, two people coming together and like, it's, you know, whatever.
But I mean, I think that's part of the problem too, is that there is kind of this shame and guilt.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
But I don't ever remember hearing, and like, you know, going back to kind of like a church setting where, you know, they would sometimes separate us like boys and girls, you know what I mean? But I never remember hearing the boys get a similar talk about.
Yeah, no, I don't remember that either.
And I don't know if that shame and guilt exists in that environment for them.
Exactly. I don't think so either. Because, like, I remember, like...
But, you know, then again, the Jonas Brothers were a huge thing, and they all had their purity rings. Do you know what I mean?
Purity rings and their leather cuff bracelets.
Oh, yeah. It was early 2000s, and we knew what was up.
What was it? What was that? Affliction shirts?
Oh, yeah.
And Hardy. Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Affliction shirts.
And acid wash jeans.
Whoa.
And then girls wore layered shirts.
Mm-hmm.
Usually from, like, the goal was either American Eagle,
Aeropostale,
Hollister, or, like, Abercrombie and Fitch if you were extra, extra bougie as fuck.
Yeah.
I went to Old Navy. And that was me being hella bougie.
Yeah. Oh, do you remember the long sleeve shirt with the spaghetti strap dress over jeans?
Yes.
Oh,
and then Ugg boots.
Ugg boots, yeah.
Oh, Jesus. All the time.
Man. I don't know what else to say about this topic.
Yeah, it's...
I have a lot of thoughts, but none of them really coherent.
Yeah.
I mean, to go with what you were saying regarding the Jonas Brothers and that whole thing, I think there are some dudes who are very serious about it, but far less and, like, less pressure, I would say, than there is on girls. Like, there are guys who decide that.
Well, there's also this thing of, like, I think I see it mostly in, like, movies or TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
But when a dad has a conversation with a son and finds out that their son is sexually active, they're like,
I can bring you around the boys.
Yeah, like he's a man.
Like it's an initiation.
That's my son. You know?
It's an initiation. But with girls, it's just like,
you
slut!
Whore.
You slut.
Yeah.
And I was.
And their father is so disappointed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they know what boys are like.
Exactly.
It's a weird initiation coming of age thing, I think.
I remember watching something. I forgot what show it was. But this guy was like, you know, back in the day when someone took a girl's virginity, it was like a sign of ownership.
Oh, no.
You know what I mean?
So here's the thing that... I don't know if it's fake history or not, because I've been afraid to research it.
Okay.
So a virginity test, right?
Yeah.
I've heard that, I don't know where exactly this took place, or if it was kind of like a normal thing in many different places, but I've heard that, like, on the eve of the wedding...
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
There would be a virginity test, and the Lord... would be part of that.
Yeah.
And there would be many cases of rape of the bride-to-be to test that she was a virgin. But yeah, I don't know if that's a true thing or not, but I've heard that.
Did y'all hear about this thing about T.I. and his daughter?
What? Do I want to know? I'm already very yucky.
We're all going to need to shower after this one.
Do y'all want to know?
I mean, I feel like I already know, but you might as well tell us.
So, T.I.'s daughter, when she goes to the lady doctor, he's like, hey, make sure her hymen's still intact. Like,
what?
Until, like, she's like, she's supposed to be virgin until she turns 18. Like, it
was. Are you?
I'm going to read like, the actual quote. Because it was.
I am grossed out by this.
It was fucked up.
Never go horseback riding, girl.
Or never bike riding or running or. Just don't move.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on. I'm pulling up this.
I'm eating ice cream. I'm sorry.
That makes me want to punch something. Not you eating ice cream, but.
So, in November, there's a segment of a podcast. It was called Ladies Like Us, and the rapper T.I. said that he accompanies his 18-year-old daughter to her annual OBGYN exam to make sure her hymen is quote unquote intact. In other words, yeah.
Oh my God.
And like, no. Even the doctor was like, hey, like sometimes that, I mean, like that can, her hymen can break because of vigor, like exercise or riding a horse or riding a bicycle. She doesn't ride a horse. And I'm like, that's not the point. Like you're this, sometimes like they don't, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like
you can move wrong and it happen. Like, I don't.
You can go in a butt. You know, it's just, mm-hmm.
He doesn't go into like the exam room.
Also, I'm sorry, but if I were a gynecologist, I would just tell him it was, whether it was or wasn't.
Oh, you know that girl and her gynecologist have a mm-hmm. pact.
That is super invasive and like
creepy to be accompanying your daughter.
Yeah,
I don't like that whatsoever.
Yeah, and so.
Also, why are we in almost 2020 now and we still think that virginity testing is a fucking thing?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not like there's no science behind that.
No.
Yeah.
It's so stupid to me.
And so, but in the light of all of this, New York lawmakers introduced a bill to ban virginity tests.
Good.
Following this. So it's a step in the right direction, but it was very like,
that's gross.
I'm finding like, I'm trying to find the actual like article that I read, but now it's like about the backlash of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can post the link for the article once you find it.
Yeah.
Cause I can't talk about TI anymore. I'm very grossed out and I feel yucky and I need to get through this next episode I can take a shower.
Yeah. I also need a pee.
Okay. KB, you want to outro us?
I will try.
This is an abrupt ending to the episode, you guys, but I'm very grossed out. I just need to not talk about it anymore.
Ooh. All right. Well, thank you everyone for listening to our very creepy episode.
This has been our spooky episode.
Exactly. Man. You can find us pretty much anywhere. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We're at Legendary Lasses. Or you could email us. It's legendarylasses@gmail.com. Send us any of your feedback, any suggestions you have, questions, comments, things like that. Weigh in on Sally's food debates if you want to.
Right.
also, we do have a website. It is legendarylasses.wordpress.com. We try to post things, like if we want to link an article or anything like that, that's where we would do it. And you can find information about us there. Let's see, what am I forgetting? Also, if you do feel so inclined, if you listen on any of the platforms that have a rating system, like Apple Podcasts, or there's a few others, I think, that use rating systems, please leave us a rating. Give us a review. That really helps us out. That's really good, especially since we're fairly new and always looking to improve. And also, if you really, really like us, you can also choose to donate to us. Anything that you donate would go to supplies for the podcast, whether that's audio equipment or books for research, things of that nature. And you can do that by going to anchor.fm/legendarylasses. Is that right?
Yep.
Yep.
And if we get two new donors, only two new donors, Sally and I will act out the Joan of Arc transcript.
Oh my gosh. Please do it. We'll act out
so much more than that, actually.
Can I?
Two new donors, that's what we'll do.
Okay, if we do three new donors, no, four new donors, we'll do that. And I will do a makeup tutorial.
Yes, I'm on board.
Okay, so bear that in mind, everyone. Anything else? Any other notes? Let's dedicate this episode to Lola. I know it was a creepy episode, but I feel like we should dedicate one to her.
She was on our podcast.
Our podcast.
Our pupcast.
Her big lady podcast.
She was on the Frida Kahlo episode.
So, I think that's it. So go out, make waves, change history, and stay legendary.
And kick some ass. Take chances too.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Enjoy your showers, everybody.